Okay, well, welcome to the PP Show. That's probably best that we had to redo that because I forgot to introduce even this podcast name. PP stands for Pace Piedemonte, and that's my pal right here, and I'm his pal. And we're very excited to have Dr. Amanda on. And me and Doc, Amanda, sorry, I'm going to call you Amanda.
Thank you.
We just met, and, you know, she is, what is the title of what your position is?
Doctor of Physical Therapy.
Doctor of Physical Therapy, very knowledgeable. I saw you on Instagram the first time I found out about you. It was even before that you told me that she was working with your wife, Stephanie. The content's amazing. And a lot of
Thank you.
I think when you see people with that following and the content's great, we just assume that they're just living a different state. So when I found out you're in Lee Summit, I was pumped. I was like, oh my gosh, this is awesome. Rachel even mentioned your stuff online. And we'll talk about everything that you do and kind of how I even learned its niche when I first started training. I have a funny story about that. But before anything else, I want you to, everyone watching and listening, tell us your story as short or long as you want it. Tell us how you got here and let us in on the insight.
All right. My name is Amanda. I am a pelvic floor physical therapist with a specialty in pelvic floor dysfunction or pelvic health therapy. Back in 2009, I started having pelvic pain, pain with sex, leakage. This is like my early 20s. I was in physical therapy school and kind of wanted to figure out how to fix those issues, right? Because I'm 21, 22, having pain with sex, things that shouldn't be happening. And started looking into it, found that it was within my practice. So started taking classes over like Christmas breaks and spring breaks that were dedicated to pelvic floor dysfunction. So this is 2009, 2010, graduated in 2011, continued to develop my specialty and started actually at a clinic here in Lee Summit called Summit Strength Physical Therapy and developed there at the time, we called it a women's health program.
Okay.
So I was strictly treating just females, but started to notice a lot of the female athletes I was treating were having leakage. So these are strong athletes, soccer players, cheerleaders, gymnasts, collegiate softball players that were leaking during their sport. And it just didn't make sense to me because coming from a background of physical therapy, if there's dysfunction in muscles, like we should be fixing the dysfunction. And instead, we were having these girls continue to train with leakage. So I remember coming and talking to one of the gymnastics coaches, one of their athletes coaches, and him very well knowing like, oh yeah, every time they land or after so many gymnastic routines, they have to change their clothes because they're so wet from leakage. And these are 15-year-olds. And it just didn't make sense. He kind of laughed it off like, well, that's just the nature of the sport. And that was kind of probably the turnaround for me to realize that really like leakage wasn't happening to athletes who fully had a weakened pelvic floor. There had to be something else going on there. It wasn't happening because these girls hadn't had babies. These are young athletes. And started looking into it a little deeper and realizing like high tone was a thing, meaning the muscles were more tight. They weren't relaxing. They weren't moving through a motion, a fluid motion like we would see any other muscle. Normal muscles should be able to contract and then relax back out, have full range of motion. Their pelvic floors weren't, and then soon realizing mine was that way. It was a high-tone pelvic floor. I had grown up an athlete. At that time when I started developing those symptoms, I was considered myself a triathlete and a half-marathon runner, so very high-endurance type sports activities, a lot of lifting weights, and realizing, like, okay, there was something I needed to change. Went and saw my gynecologist. They just said, have wine. Things will go away. That wasn't the case. And continued to look into it further and found we needed to be like down training the pelvic floor, eccentrically loading the pelvic floor for these women that were having those leakage.
Hmm. So I guess I associated everything that you did with postpartum.
Oh,
if it's not postpartum, what do you call it? Just pelvic floor. Just the
pelvic floor physical therapy, pelvic health.
Okay.
Yeah, we see a wide range of like the 15-year-olds all the way. Our oldest was 101 recently.
Wow.
Who just wanted to have dry pants before she turned 102, and that was over COVID.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, wide range.
Why don't you think, and I could be wrong, why don't you think there's more people like you?
There's a ton.
Is there?
Yeah. And to me, I guess because that's who I follow on Instagram, there's a lot more of us out there. There's still not enough with the amount of people who have pelvic floors, which is everyone, male or female. There's not enough pelvic floor physical therapists actually to go around. It's a very niche market. Everyone should know how to use their pelvic floor. Typically, people have issues throughout their lifespan, whether it's just leakage or pelvic pain. male or female combined, it doesn't matter. There's a lot that plays into it. If you can think like knee joint, hip joint, shoulder, those are our muscle related, a lot of area for compensation. Same thing goes for the pelvic floor. So lots, I mean, we have 28 different muscles down there. They connect from the pubic bone in the front all the way back to the sacral tailbone area and out to the hips. Within 28 different muscles, there's lots of room for compensation and error. Just like we can get in shoulder joints, we can get instability due to some muscles that are more tight, pulling the joint in a different range, or hip, whatever it may be. Pelvic floor is the same way. So it's just retraining it.
Now, do you have a assessment or a system? Are you giving patients like a diagnostic? Are you diagnosing them or just kind of testing them, figuring out, all right, this is what I believe is wrong with you. Here's what we're going to do. What does that process look like?
So most of our patients come in with a referral from their doctor that says, you know, patients coming in for pelvic pain or muscle weakness, hip pain, low back pain. I always take that with a grain of salt. Like that's what they've been diagnosed with, but I still want to do my own testing because we're more movement specialists than the doctors are. That's our job, is the musculoskeletal system. So I want to know, what does it look like functionally when you move? When are you having discomfort and pain? What's your range of motion? What does the core stability look like? Are we compensating? Are we seeing instability somewhere? So I do my own assessment regardless of what we are getting from the doctor, or if, say, I don't know, Susie Q came and booked herself an appointment off the internet and she thinks she has this going on because she read it on Google, I'm going to still do my own assessment and see exactly what's going on.
Mm-hmm. Is this 100% female?
No.
Okay.
No.
I'll talk about that for a second.
Yeah. All humans are born with a pelvic floor. And regardless of external anatomy or how things are positioned, like a couple muscles are renamed a little differently, male versus female, but they still work the same. They contract the same. They relax the same. Men have similar issues just like women do. We probably see more males in the clinic with pelvic pain issues. So think like type A personalities, high-strung jobs that might be really stressful for them. So like finance, firefighter, very athletic conditioned guys. Or it could be people that just sit all freaking day, which look at our society, like especially this last year. How many people are we knowing that are working from home and sitting in a pelvic tilted posture.
Yeah.
And we got to get that sucker moving the opposite direction or else your tailbone's going to be nice and tight. The pelvic floors are going to be more tight. People are going to have more leakage with that. Or maybe it's pulling on the low back. They're going to create more low back pain, hip pain. So we're getting them in just to really go over postural related exercises. Maybe it's weak glutes from that type of posture and teaching them how to move their pelvic floor again. I joke with my husband because he knows I talk about his pelvic floor. But, like, for instance, for males, like, when they're urinating, if you have, like, a start and stop flow or it takes you a long time to even get the sucker going, that could be pelvic floor tension. So really learning to, like, release, breathe. Breathing does a really great job not only to, like, calming your brain and your thoughts, but it calms your pelvic floor. So it's a really wonderful thing to do.
I got a follow-up question with that. So what about men, well, and I guess women too, that have a hard time holding it when they have to go?
Yep.
Is that going to be pretty much the same?
That was my next question. Like, my belief system made me believe that there's some point in time I'm going to be that guy leaving the Royals game five or six times in the span of four innings because I got to take a piss.
So most people would think like, oh gosh, I must have a weak pelvic floor because my bladder urgency is like through the roof, right? I'm peeing five or six times in an hour or a Royals game in 4 hours. A lot of times that can come through like the pelvic floor being more high tone or tight. Your muscles are then around your bladder and your bladder can't really stretch as far as it needs to fill up with urine. So it gets this like claustrophobic type feeling, like it wants to stretch, but it feels the pelvic floor is there. So it gets that urgency feeling of I gotta go. So we start down this rabbit hole of our bladder's in charge of now our brain telling us we gotta go. And it becomes more, I don't want to say psychological, but it is kind of a, psychological. Because you got to retrain it where then your brain is then controlling your bladder again. So it's a lot of retraining the system, thinking if I just went 30 minutes ago. Do I really need to go again? Probably not.
Right.
What are some other things I can do? So we teach our patients like deep belly breathing, kind of closing your eyes, visualizing things melting. So you can do that at the Royals game.
Right,
you
sure.
can tap your right foot or your left foot because that is the same nervous system that supplies your bladder. So it can distract your bladder from that urgency feeling.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of retraining. It's not always just weak tissue.
So is this in the same category as proprioception? Like you got to make them aware, able to contract. Because like, I will sometimes go out of my scope of what my certification was with my clients just because I self-educate. I like learning a lot about a lot of things. And, you know, with pelvic tilts, areas that are tight, I think often it's weak. And that's just been a miscommunication, I think, with a lot of things. It's either, it's like binary to a lot of people. It's either tight or weak.
Right.
And would you say that they correlate with each other?
They can.
Okay.
But we can also have some pelvic floors that are tight. But once they learn to let go, again, bringing that awareness there, once they let go, maybe it's a strong pelvic floor that's just been high tone. So if you do think like your CrossFit athletes or your athletes that come in here, your more fit individuals, they might be more high and tight. But once you let it go, it is a strong pelvic floor. It's just been stuck here. So it kind of fatigues out. Like if it needs to tighten, especially around their urethra and they're having leakage rep after they get so many reps in, it could just be that it's fatigued out. But it's a strong pelvic floor. It just has to learn to relax again and work through that full range of motion.
That tightness is a contraction, right? That's what it's contracted. It's a muscle. So
they are just muscles. So when you break it down and think about it as just muscles, it's really not that hard. Like it's not as scary to people. We can't see it. So people get really nervous on like what's really going on down there, but they're just muscles. So if you think about like how is my bicep working? Okay, it contracts up. It relaxes back down. But do I want to come in and lift weights with my arms stuck at like dinosaur arms at 90 degrees? No, because that's not beneficial, right? I want to be able to have that full range of motion. I might want to do some exercises here, but then I put it back down, right?
Yeah.
I always relax it back down. We don't do that with the pelvic floor.
Right.
Again, we can't see it. That's where the awareness comes in. There are so many people out there that aren't really in tune with that pelvic floor, but we're not really taught how to do that either.
Right.
And if you think difference between like male and female, you guys touch your stuff daily, right? You touch it, you see it, you get that proprioception, you know where it's at.
Yeah.
Now, we don't.
Stuff, where's, like, on the body, touch the pelvic floor, where is that? Is that, like, the gooch area?
So think, like, sits bones. Like, you're sitting on your bony butt, right?
Yeah.
Sorry. You're sitting on your butt. Like, your pelvic floor is stuck in between your sits bones and then your pubic bone on the front.
Okay.
Tailbone, sacral area in the back. So you can kind of rock all through that pelvic floor. If you want to really get in tone with it, get a bouncy ball. You could put a bouncy ball inside, so medial to your sits bones, and you can massage that bouncy ball front to back, left to right, and you can find trigger points with a bouncy ball. Those are cheap.
I want to make sure I heard you right. I think I did. So like one of my greatest fears whenever I'm out playing in professional golf, especially when there's a lot of spectators, is like, this happened to me one time. I really had to go, and I was like, you know what? It's like, you know, you're just playing in a casual round of golf. You really got to go to the bathroom. What's a guy going to go do? He's going to go find a tree.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I really had to go, and there's, you know, I don't know. There wasn't 50,000 people anyway, but there was 1,000 people, you know, on that particular golf hole, and I'm like, what am I going to do here? You know what I mean? Like, and it started freaking me out because I was like, I started thinking, well, there's not a bathroom for 3 holes. What am I going to do? So at that time, I should actually relax that area.
Mm-hmm. Doing so, like right now, what is it? Like Phil Mickelson is very big into visualization,
right.
Down training,
right.
Really being in calm. That would have been great for you to have done.
Because okay.
When you do that, you're relaxing the pelvic floor. It's not making the bladder feel claustrophobic.
Okay.
You're letting those muscles relax back down. We hold a lot of emotion in our pelvic floor.
Sure.
So whether it's stress and anxiety, it's like a positive stress and anxiety, or like, woohoo, I'm super, you know, stoked right now. Or if it's more like, oh my God, did you just watch the news? Like the condo fell down in Florida yesterday. Like how awful. Any right. of that type of stress is going to create this pelvic floor tension.
Right.
This pelvic floor tightness, because it's an emotion we're feeling. So if you get that nervousness out on the golf course,
sure.
You're probably going to feel that more urgency kick in.
Yeah.
But if you can be like, dude, it's okay. You just peed 20 minutes ago.
Right.
Close your eyes. Calm back down. You should lose that urgency.
Yeah. Well, I realize what I do, though, is, and I'm sure a lot of people do this, is I'm squeezing those muscles down there to keep it.
Yeah, I know.
Hold
so
it in.
You're telling me the phrase, don't get your panties in a bunch is real. Yeah. You know, because you're just, okay. I mean, it makes a lot of sense.
It.
So I know that you're comfortable giving away your best advice on social media. I love that.
Thank you.
So what is the first, if you were to give someone the first practical tip to do at home, if they are someone like that or a female who just delivered, had a baby, what is the first step?
It's always breathing, in my opinion. I don't think we do enough of it. Like, so meditation, breathing, really getting in touch with your pelvic floor. So you can lay down to breathe, to work out your meditation, but don't be afraid to, like, put your hand on that tissue down there. So for females, across the labia. For males, maybe right underneath the penile tissue, so the tissue between the sits bones, the more perineal area. Just feel, like, as you're breathing, is that tissue, it's only going to move a couple of millimeters, but get used to that. As you breathe in, that pelvic floor should lengthen. You should feel that come into your hand. As you blow out, it's going to move back up a little bit. If you don't feel it, get a hand towel, fold it in a rectangle, and then fold it in a V so it looks like this. Sit your pubic bone at the tip of that V, and you'll get a little proprioception as you're sitting on it, and do the same thing. Just breathe into that area. Really work on letting it go. And then people always want to know, like, well, how do I do a Kegel? Kegels are not, honestly, my favorite thing in the world. Kegels are a muscle. Kegels are a muscle contraction.
Yeah.
And what people will typically do is they're like, well, I've done my Kegels. Well, people will do Kegels, and they'll squeeze and squeeze and squeeze.
You're holding a Kegel all day long.
Right. Yeah. So then that's creating, like, glute tension, muscle tension. Not so much, they think they're clenching the butt, but it's like the backside of the pelvic floor, so tight around the anal area, which then creates more like queefing during yoga or
right.
passing gas when you don't want to,
yeah.
sure. Like when they're walking or doing things in the gym. So really teaching them even how to connect with their pelvic floor, learn how to pick up the pelvic floor in that Kegel, but how to put it back down. So like the reverse
right.
Kegel. I'm on social media, I talk about like thinking of picking up a blueberry or sucking up a smoothie with your vagina and then putting it back down.
Yeah.
I do that because your mouth and your pelvic floor are split in utero. So at 8 weeks of gestation, your head and your rump split. They're made of the same muscles, so you can activate and deactivate those muscles very easily by thinking about things that you can do with your mouth.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So sucking up a smoothie with your mouth, you try to do it right now while you're sitting here. For you guys, it's more anal area. Picking it up, putting it back down, let it come back down all the way, and really working on that range of motion.
Well, something that we do in the class, especially after hard workouts, we just started implementing this. They love it, parasympathetic breathing, especially when their adrenaline skyrocketed. And like I said, I touched on it in my certification. I'm not an expert.
Yeah.
Continuously self-educating myself on it. So for someone at home or listening, when you're breathing in, that is actually the reverse contraction. You're uncontracting on the breath in.
You got it.
And when you blow all your air out, I know that that's when you should feel your transverse abdominals, all that contract. That's when you should
feel.
Yep,
they're recoiling.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay. So do you know about, they say chest breathing is bad. My question is, I know that we need it all.
Yes.
It can't just be stomach breathing. It can't just be chest.
It's a lie to say that your chest isn't going to move because your lungs are underneath your chest.
Right.
So you're going to have a little bit of expansion. I'm not, and that's, again, like back in the early 2000s or mid 2000s, like that was the thing. It was diaphragmatic breathing. Don't move your chest. Just move your belly. And it doesn't make sense because you need to have that rib mobility and that rib motion with that diaphragm. If your diaphragm works hand in hand with your pelvic floor, those have to work together. You need to have that mobility happening as well.
Yeah.
Especially for our postpartum girls who things have been shoved up. Your diaphragm's been stuck up in that rib cage for all of pregnancy. Postpartum, it's not moving very well. So you've really got to work on exercises to make that mobility happen.
Now, when you make this content and you put yourself in a position very approachable, very vulnerable, I know that there is a direct correlation from psychology and physiology. So, example with functional movement patterns. I know that
right.
you just completed the first part of the certification. They talk about your mood is oftentimes a big reflection of your posture.
Mm-hmm.
So, how do you train the mind and get women okay with, just maybe elevating their mindset and their mental health to make it easier for their body to do these things. Because we live in a constant state, I think, of being addicted to feeling sympathetic nervous system all the time. We, like, are addicted to feeling anxious all the time without even realizing it, I believe. Yeah. So how do you give any lifestyle tips, just mental health tips? Or what is your opinion on that?
I don't know if I do. I have no idea. My whole thing with our social media is let's bring humor in with it. Okay. How can we make people laugh to get them to want to watch it? And then while we're doing whatever we're doing, we're throwing in pelvic floor tips or, I don't know, just being goofy, holding up vagina vulvas or tampon costumes, just to get people to giggle and realize, like, oh my gosh, yeah, my sister has this going on, or well, gosh, yeah, I pee when I laugh, or to realize that it's not, it's very common, it happens a lot, but again, that's not what muscles are supposed to do. So I just feel like the humor side of it makes them feel a little bit more comfortable,
yeah,
and that they can connect with us. But I do want them to know, like, shoot, I feel like I've had every pelvic floor symptom in the book. I feel like that's just something that has been given to me to then be able to overcome and help other people go through it. Mm-hmm. And I'm not afraid to talk about it. If they have questions on it, they can ask. They send tons of messages. We try to get back to them as quickly as we can. But again, I just want them to feel comfortable so they feel like they can ask the questions so we can see, give them the right direction of help.
Mm-hmm. 'Cause everyone's just gonna be so different.
Mm-hmm. Right. And this used to be totally different too. Like before Instagram, I was posting very similar content, but on Facebook. Okay. I would get such hate messages. Not that I'm not getting hate messages now, but, and then I'd immediately take it down. And mm-hmm. realizing, my husband was like, who are you going to help if you keep taking it down? You're not going to help anybody.
That's the ultimate supporter right there.
Yes. Awesome. So then we started putting it up and then talking about it. Now we do Wellness Wednesdays, and he'll answer questions with me where we'll talk about issues that we've had with public health and our relationship. Mm-hmm. And people like to hear, I guess, his side of the story too. Not sure. That I don't. He's a good guy.
Right.
But it's interesting how it's kind of evolved.
Right.
I wanted to make sure. So we have Rachel Tortorano here. She's one of our trainers here at AMP. Rachel, you're not going to be mic'd, but will you tell us what is your cert that's related to this?
Corrective exercise and pregnancy and postpartum care.
Sarah.
Corrective exercise mm-hmm. and pregnancy.
Postpartum care.
Postpartum care. Okay. So, Rachel, did you have any questions? I know you're limited on time. Do you have any questions for Amanda? I want to make sure you got those in.
Yeah. As a trainer, so do you see that there is a gap from where people come to see you, you assess them, you treat them, you diagnose them, and you work with them? Once you've finished working with them, are they good to, like, go back in a gym and kill it? Or is there a knowledge gap from personal trainers to you, where you need somebody to stand in that gap and have some awareness, not that I'm at your level, but some awareness of what we're talking about with this breathing, the pelvic floor connection. Is there a need for that?
There's an absolute need for it, especially I think PTs have, the way we were trained in school, physical therapists, whereas there's a discharge, mm-hmm. and I think sometimes we discharge too quickly, where maybe they're not quite ready for the full stuff in the gym, but to have somebody like you come on and be that hand that can help them through it and guide them, I think is huge. I know, like at our clinic, I want to take them a couple more steps past that discharge point, where then we're doing a little bit more higher level, but having you there with any of person in the gym, I think is huge, because you can easily see, like, oh, we're holding our breath with this, probably should do that, because then we're going to end up maybe promoting prolapse during their 6-month recovery postpartum, because we know that tissue's weakened, just even with hormones in general, like yada yada yada, or the diastasis, because that fascia can take up to 2 years to close. Like, there's so much that plays into that that I think having somebody with that specialty with a PT is huge, especially for our patients. And I think you should let every pelvic PT know that you're doing that. Uh-huh. So we can have that connection with you and yeah. create that relationship, because mm-hmm. it's definitely a must.
Okay.
Great question, Rachel. Mm-hmm. Did you have anything, any other ones that were kind of?
Also, as a trainer, you know, in a perfect world, everybody would come see you. It'd be like a standard checkup.
Oh yeah,
right?
That'd be amazing.
See you, you know, but we don't live in that perfect world.
Yeah.
So what would be the signs and symptoms that I would look for to go, hey, this is outside of my scope. You need to go see Amanda.
Yeah.
Where is that line?
I would always ask them, like, are you having any leakage with your lifting, any sit-ups, any of your activity, any leakage? Are you feeling any pressure? Like, you use tampon down there, or things are falling out. Are you having any discomfort in the more of the midline? Any hip, if any hip pain, low back pain, or any increased bleeding, say they are, because that can happen up to about 12 weeks postpartum. So if they're coming in sooner than that, sure, that would definitely be a recommendation. And then tailbone pain. I feel like we do an internal rectal exam to mobilize that tailbone, so that's a really quick fix for us to be able to do that and then send them back to you guys too. But I never want to take away from what they're doing. I always want to see how can we help you guys keep them here in the gym. What do we need to be doing on our side? And the same goes with any athlete. Like, whatever they're doing, my absolute last thing to do is to make them stop doing the activity. What can we modify on our end in the clinic to keep them here with you? But then I would love to also talk with you guys. Mm-hmm. Like, what are you guys doing at the gym? How can we modify it here to keep them here too? Did I answer that?
Yeah, that was great.
Very well.
So, like, on average, I know everybody would be different, but on average, how long are they staying within your care?
Ooh, that's different for everybody.
It's different for everybody.
Yeah, it depends. For what we're seeing in the clinic, and this was just like, hey, I've got a theory. Let's test it out. Over COVID was perfect. We tried to get as many women in during pregnancy, mm-hmm, to start training their bodies, strengthening them during pregnancy. And then I like to see them 2 weeks for a virtual appointment and or 4 weeks in the clinic, where typically old school is don't go see a physical therapist until 6 weeks postpartum. However, when people typically call, hey, I'm 6 weeks postpartum, you can't get into a pelvic floor PT for like 8 weeks. Mm-hmm. So what we love to do with our patients, get them in during their pregnancy, book them their postpartum visit with us, and then typically for anybody who's been coming during pregnancy, we've already been talking to them, getting them to retrain the tissue just like we would if it was a knee joint, like an ACL, a hip, a shoulder, rotator cuff injury. You typically see your PT to retrain tissue, move through range of motion, all that jazz very early in the ballgame. Mm-hmm. We don't do that with our postpartum women. And our theory was if we could start doing that sooner, we could start rehabbing them a lot faster and get them back to their activities sooner. Mm-hmm. Then we're just messing with us still probably needing to modify in the gym due to hormones. And we don't want to increase their risk for prolapse. So really being very smart in those first 6 months up to that year. But if we could do that much sooner, I think it would be an easier way to get them in the gym faster. Because for our women that we did that, I mean, some of them are back to running by 8 to 10 weeks.
Amazing, yeah.
And typically we like to say, like, let's see how you're doing at 12 weeks. But there are some of our women, it's like, you're not even ready until we get closer to that 6 month time frame because the pelvic floor isn't still moving as well. Like, let's say a cesarean delivery. Like, that's a major abdominal surgery. Most of them, we don't think pelvic floor needs to be, most of them need to be seen in pelvic floor, but they do because there's so much more going on. And if we can get them, so they might take a little bit longer to be able to come back to the gym, even though they might be coming in sooner.
Great questions.
I'm a rambler.
I am soaking this
all
up.
Great. I got one I have to ask right now because I don't want to forget this.
I know, I'm thinking of mine.
Yeah, so it was interesting. I was just having a conversation with one of our athletes before I got back here again today. He's a professional soccer player. And I was like, I told him, hey, there's some stuff I want to work on you with. I've been watching some of your film. It was so funny. Right after I said that, then I got here the next day, and Austin was already doing it with him. So I was like, okay. So I was like, that's the thing about him and I, is our ideas of how to train the body are so similar. So I think this will really apply to him too. And one of the things that we really believe in big time, especially probably within the last year, is how integral of a part the pelvis plays in a lot of movements. So when we have an athlete, for instance, that just doesn't move their pelvis correctly, I mean, we know all the stuff to do, right? We can take them through all the different stuff, but does it make sense at that point to say, hey, let's go see this pelvic floor therapist, and maybe there's something going on there that we could fix that, and then it's going to speed this process up?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And even having us come to the gym and watch them, we might be able to just pull them off to the side. It might not even have to be an internal assessment. It might just be us giving the right cues to get things to move a little bit better, or us doing a couple different tests to see what's maybe a little bit more tight.
Yeah, that's something. That's something in the future we definitely have to consider. Because, you know, we were talking about this. Like, him and I argue all the time. Well, for especially for a lot of these movements, is it the spine? Is it the pelvis? Is it, does it start in the feet? And my thoughts on that change all the time.
It changed recently for me. I used to think ground up, but I think what is the most, like, everything distal from the
foundation.
Hip. Yeah, right. It's just the pelvis.
Right. Yeah. So I was just thinking about that. I was like, man, I'm thinking about different athletes, and it's like, you know, it would probably make sense to, like you said, either have you look at them or, you know, or have them come see you just to say, hey, this could, you know, the worst that they're going to learn is, hey, you're good. So now you got to just do the work that they're telling you to do.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So.
And it's really like, think of the pelvis like the foundation of the house. What takes the longest when you're building a house? The foundation. You've got the concrete that's got to sit for so long. Then you've got to build up from that. It's going to take the longest. And if we are coming in to the gym and we're compensating, or maybe we're an iron athlete, like, we'll see those patients in the clinic and they get so ticked off because they're like, do you understand what I'm doing already? Like, I'm such a strong person. But when you're looking at movements, you're like, yeah, but you're totally not using the muscles correctly or as well as we could functionally. So we've got to take like 10 steps back, and it's boring.
Yeah.
Very boring.
Right.
I get it, because I'm an athlete myself. But it has to be done in order to keep us wanting to do the same activities in our 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s.
Right.
Like, we want to continue to do the things we love. So we've got to really focus on it when we're younger or right now to make sure that those things are happening. But again, think of it as your foundation. It takes longer with anything else that we're building.
Right.
And that's got to be your body too.
Right. Well, with that note, I want to know, like, okay, so I know it's easy probably for all three of us to talk so passionately about this. We are hungry for knowledge. You're obviously an expert in what you do. Do the majority of your patients, clients, come to you already bought into you? You know, there's a point in time, there's some people I have to, like, kind of flip sales mode, although I never talk like a salesman. I just talk from my heart and, you know, my passion. But, like, we have a lot of integrity in the sense that what we do with the group classes, it may not resonate why we're doing it, but it's always coming from back to our intention of, this is good for you. This is what we believe is going to do. So, like, what does that look like for you? Do most people have that buy-in? If they don't, what is that process for you?
Social media has helped. Yep. We have people that have already built up that trust factor with us because they'll come in and they're like, oh, these are your boys, Jackson, Lane, and Hudson. I'm like, oh,
they know you. They know you. Yep.
Yeah, and that sometimes is a little creepy, but I appreciate them taking the time to watch it and already get that trust factor with us, because then it doesn't take so long for us to be able to move forward in our scope of practice or our plan of care with those patients. For some patients, still, they come in and it's like, my doctor told me I needed to be here. And you're like, okay, like, well, what's going on? I pee my pants every day or during allergy season. Okay, yeah, we go through all the sales, I don't want to say sales pitch, but the education side of it. And, like, this is something that you don't have to live with. This is what's going on with the muscles. We can probably improve it in this amount of time. And sometimes for those patients, it'll still take, like, 4 to 6 visits to get their full trust from them. And then they're usually like, I'm so happy I came. Why didn't I do this sooner?
Do you think the results feed the trust?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Because I'm sure they're like, I have never heard of this. Why am I coming to pelvic floor physical therapy? Why are you doing an internal exam to touch muscles? Well, the muscles are inside your pelvis. We have to know exactly what's going on with them. Like, I can assume things, but there are plenty of times I assume what's going on. But then when we get to the internal exam, which is similar to a gynecological visit, things are a little different than what I was anticipating.
Yeah.
There's 28 different muscles down there.
Right. So this could be a really bad question, but
no bad questions. Nothing's TMI.
Okay. So do you do internal examinations on men?
Absolutely. Rectal.
And you're going, okay.
Yeah, rectal exams.
Okay.
Yep.
Yeah.
Same for anybody with a tailbone issue. Like, gosh. I swore in physical therapy school I would never stick my finger up somebody's butt, and here I am doing it almost on a daily basis.
Right, yeah.
Getting paid for it, though.
I know, right? That's true.
Here's another question, too. You talked about cues. To me, I've had the best success when I can resonate a cue, and I just get freaking excited when I see that it works. And a lot of times, if one works for one person, it worked for others. I guess my first question is, are most, and is this differ between men and women, are most of your patients posterior tilted or posterior tilted or anterior tilted?
That's a great question. It depends. I don't want to say which. Yeah, it's pretty split.
Is it?
Yeah.
Okay.
I would say more. Yeah, it really depends.
Really?
Yeah. You wouldn't. Because we see such a wide variety. Like, some of our pregnant women are more stuck in that anterior pelvic tilt with the belly coming out. But then we see a lot of flat butted posterior pelvic tilted older population.
Yeah. Right.
So it's a good mix. Yeah. It really is.
What's your favorite cue for
both? I will say it is really, it seems harder for people to actually get into that anterior pelvic tilt because I think people are so used to posterior pelvic tilting, like yeah. so cat-cow, for instance.
Yeah.
Like that position of being able to let their pelvis come down and let their belly button go to the ground, they're like, oh, that hurts. Oh, that hurts. And yeah. you realize that lack of motion is there where anybody can like tuck their bum. I mean, a lot of disconnect to, I guess, awareness of how the body's moving.
Yeah.
But.
So what we used to do at the at our old gym is that was one of the first things we ever talk about is getting people to learn how to use their pelvis. I don't know if this is a valid coaching suggestion, but we'd always tell people you need to learn how to twerk. If you go in the mirror and you, I want you to do it at home. We tell people go in there and twerk. If you see any upper background, and you're probably not isolating your pelvic tilt. I mean, what does that make sense? Like, I see you lying on the ground and doing kind of like
yep.
pressing your lower back into the ground. Like,
oh, I don't press our lower back in the ground.
Okay, okay.
No.
Bad cue.
No, I don't like belly button and spine.
Okay, why?
Because a lot of those times, especially postpartum women, we're overutilizing the upper rectus abs and the obliques.
Okay.
So if they pull belly button to spine, most often they're going to go there, and then it shoves down, not shoves down, but pushes down the pressure into that lower abs, which is what we're trying to connect, or into that pelvic floor. So we're going to see more prolapse symptoms with that typically, okay. or less cueing of that transverse abdominis. So the lower abs, they get stretched first with pregnancy. They don't get cut. The nervous system gets cut. And other tissue layers get cut during that cesarean delivery, but it is hard to wake up. Vaginal birthing ladies, it comes on a little bit faster, but our cesarean moms, like, it can take forever to reconnect the dots down there, especially wow. with multiple pregnancies and births. So I don't like belly button to spine. I prefer the zip up or ribs to pelvis, but I watch what's going on in those lower abs.
Yeah.
So a zipper, like, so zipper starting at the pubic bone. So the first part of that zipper is more of like the picking up the blueberry, sucking up that smoothie. So hit pelvic floor. Then we think like a zipper coming across hip bone, front of the pelvis. And then that zipper goes all the way up to breastbone. So we want to connect pelvic floor, lower abs, and then upper rectus and obliques.
And are you training this just through spinal flexion extension exercises, or where do the transverse?
We're starting neutral with connecting the dots. Then we get on all fours to see if we can do that against gravity. Some people can do this better supine or on their back. Some people can do it better on fours against gravity. It really depends. Then we're moving through motion. But yeah, isolating it at first just to see how things are connecting, because that nervous system is totally not working well.
Mm-hmm.
So it's more reconnecting the dots, retraining the tissue. And then moving through arm, leg movements. And then I want to get them up in more functional movements,
right.
whether we are moving across the body, still getting those obliques to kick in, but I want to work on that rib depression with it.
Yeah.
Trying to get that to happen.
So I had an epiphany the other day. I always look back in my past and all the issues I ever had connect dots the more I learn. And my gait pattern, especially with my left ankle, or my left foot, has always sucked. And I'm not sure if you do any like gait okay. analysis. Okay, great.
Yeah.
So, you know, outside foot, big toe, big mm-hmm. toe stability, all that great stuff. The one thing I did not realize, and my gait pattern, I believe, has, and it would have been someone's great testimonial. It should have been my own because I taught myself this stuff, I believe. But what goes on with the pelvis, if I'm correct, is you're pretty much going from anterior to posterior with each step, right? There is movement of the pelvis when you stride.
Yes, but and you're also moving this direction too.
Okay. Why? I've been told, like, I don't know who told me this, but I thought it was, I don't anymore, and I don't know why I don't believe anymore, but I thought it used to be a bad thing to have a lot of hip shifting when you walk.
Right, but you're getting, you want more stability, but you're still getting that flow of, like, you've got a stride in front, like, your body's not stiff when it's walking. Yeah. You've got to have this fluid motion.
Mm-hmm.
So you're getting some movement front to back where you're getting this direction, but yeah, your pelvic floor is a whole bowl, so you're going to get lots of different angles moving.
Yeah.
It's not one stiff board.
Yes, makes a lot of sense.
But yeah, when we're assessing, I want to see stability when we're doing like marching. I don't want to see like a hip drop or a hip rotation too far in, and we work on that stability then to move into more dynamic
so
walking,
I,
running.
I do have like, actually I'll save this for the end, which we are 40 minutes in. I don't want to keep you longer than we said. How much time do you have? 15 minutes. Great. I do want to talk about this because I think a lot of people get inspired by this. I want to know what inspired you to create content. Was it, did you see it as an opportunity? Did someone you see in your field start doing it? Like, how did that start?
I think it was just spread awareness.
Okay.
Like, I knew I was not the only one dealing with my pelvic floor issues, and people were still coming in saying, am I the only one dealing with this? And I'm like, I'm a pelvic floor PT, and Lisa, I'm at Missouri. You're not the only one dealing with this. So really letting people, letting them know, like, we're in a safe zone to change the attitude behind pelvic floor PT. Because if you go to pelvic, like, to PT, it's like, ugh, like, it's a negative thing. Like, I'm dealing with pain. I'm frustrated. I'm leaking. I just worked out and was a badass. But now I feel pressure in my pelvis. Like, everything was so negative. And I wanted them to change that. Like, look what we can do to make it a positive, you know, emotion for you. Make the, enjoy your pelvis. I mean, I feel like women are brought up to hate their pelvis. They have periods and it's like, oh, it's so negative. I'm bleeding. Like, no, it's a positive thing. Like, your body's working well when it has a period. Like, we need to start reframing that education around female health. And that was, I don't know, I just really wanted to do it to kind of educate, let people know, one, and at the time, it was 1 in 7 women were dealing with pelvic pain.
Mm-hmm.
And let them know, like, okay, like, there's a lot of people on social media who follow me, so that would be, you know, so many people that are dealing with this issue. Or 1 in 2 people have leakage, bladder leakage within their lifespan. Okay, well, we've got now, what, 50,000 followers? So that's a lot of people that are peeing their pants. So who can we help by just educating and putting that content out there? So it's really awareness, normalize pelvic health.
And I'm always interested in, like, did you always have that frame of mind, or was it when you learned you gave hope for yourself and your quality of life? Like, were you always that positive outlook on it, or what?
Oh gosh, no. Okay. When I think when you're in it, like, it's a very negative thing. Like, I'm broken, my vagina's broken, our relationship is broken because we can't have sex. I can't stick a tampon in me. Like, what's going on with my vagina? Cosmopolitan says that everything's supposed to be rainbows and butterflies, and that's just not happening for me. Orgasms are supposed to happen internally because there's a G-spot. Why is that not happening? Oh, because there's a lot more clitoral orgasms that are happening. There was just so much negative shit around pelvic health, and I just thought we should help get the education out there and make people not feel so dumb and just negative about it. We needed to reframe that, which is why the Empower Your Pelvis kind of started 4 years ago, was to really bring empowerment. At the time, I used to say hope. I don't want hope anymore. It's more like belief. Let them know, like, your memories are in the past. We're looking towards the future. We want the dreams. What dream do you have your pelvic floor? You want to be able to run without peeing your pants? Absolutely. Let's make it happen. You want to have a great orgasmic sex? Let's make it happen. Let's not keep thinking about the past and what we've been dealing with. Let's really look toward the future.
Mm-hmm. I love that. I love how you really attack it from the whole, you know, the whole holistic, you know, everything. It's not just your pelvic floor. It's your mind. It's your breathing.
There's so much mindset. Yeah. People need to do more gratitude. They need to be thankful for what they have. Absolutely. But then, like, what are your goals?
Yeah.
What's your goals? Okay, that might be a lofty goal. Well, let's break it down. What can we accomplish in 2 weeks?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Let's do that. Let's, you know, chip away at it, because it is possible. For instance, we've got a gal who is in for pelvic pain, dealing with issues, pain with sex, that sort of thing. Went for a bike ride, sparked up her pelvic pain, terrified to sit on a bike again. Doesn't want to ever do it. Well, then, as we've been working, like, that pain, I don't know if you guys are familiar with pain science stuff.
I don't think so.
Okay. So a lot of your emotions may hold on to that pain. So she's healed, right? We would think injured tissue is going to probably be healed around that 12-week mark or somewhere, like, it should heal itself. Well, she was seeing me a year after this incident. And so we really needed to go more mindset into it and look about, like, how can we bring a positive light to this bike or the bike seat? So I started asking her, like, have you sat on a bike? Well, gosh, no, I wouldn't do that. Like, I don't want to spark my pain up. I'm like, how do you know it's going to increase your pain? So you start with baby steps. Like, we sat on a bike seat. That's it. Well, I don't have any pain. Great. Okay, let's sit on it for 2 minutes. Let's sit on it for 10 minutes. Great. How do you feel about riding on the bike for about a minute? Oh, my gosh. Like, she gets nervous and scared again. Spiked up. Like, super anxious. Okay, well, let's give it a go. Let's try it for a minute. 2 minutes. 10 minutes. Sister's riding a bike again. Like, she's doing great things.
Yeah.
But again, that fear of what it was we had to retrain the whole system. And I can't do that with just stretching a pelvic floor. Mm-hmm. Exercises can only go so far, and then you got to really tap into the brain because the brain controls the body.
Yeah. I mean, gosh, Tim Grover always says the best coaches, teachers in the world have the ability to change one's belief system. That's like the hardest thing to do. And, I mean, that's a prime.
Did you listen to him on Ed Milet? He's got the winning book, right?
Yeah. Kay. So, yeah, I mean, I listen to all those guys, and I mean, but yeah, I really started kind of reverse engineering. Okay, like, have I done that with certain people? And I feel like those testimonials are the best.
Yes.
I mean, that's.
And those are the ones that light my world on fire.
Right. It keeps you. That's so fulfilling.
Yes.
And for them and you.
Yes. Because you're like, okay, we've done everything muscularly that we need to do, and that hasn't changed it yet. And if I haven't found that puzzle piece to patients, I'm not giving up. Like, we're going to figure out what's the puzzle piece that we need to change into that, flip that switch right for them. But those are awesome patients.
Well, and obviously you know what you're doing with social media. You're good at it. Like, how did you, there was a learning curve.
I don't know what I'm doing.
Well, as far as just like the videos, like they're well edited, and I know there's a learning curve to that. So like, did you just teach yourself how to make a real Instagram reel?
Yes. It started with TikTok because Instagram reels didn't have it. Right. And so I remember shooting my first TikTok video like in April, and then I was like, shit, this isn't for me because I can't dance. And then moved into September 2020, and I was like, well, I guess let's give this a shot again. So I did a song with pelvic wands, teaching people, like, if you have pelvic pain, you can stretch out the muscles.
Yeah.
That one did all right. Well, then I wore, people call them their vaginas, but it's your vulva. What you see externally, the labial tissue, it's your vulva. So we had vulva costumes for Halloween in our clinic. And so I was wearing the vulva and teaching people how to stretch. That video did really well, but then it got taken down by TikTok because of the vulva costume. I don't know. I was fully clothed. But those type of things, I realized, like, gosh, like, people just don't know their anatomy. People don't know that we have, how many holes we have, what the tissue's called, how to insert a tampon correctly, how to put in a cup. Like, even, no offense, guys, but guys don't really know anything about female anatomy either. So reteaching them.
Oh, we know it all.
Yeah. So that even sparked us, like, let's do more virtual classes. So, like, for instance, we've got a class coming up, Spark It Up in the Bedroom, which is for pelvic pain patients or bringing back, like, their sex life. And we advertise it as, like, bring your partner with you. Yeah. Let them learn, too. So it's not just, like, you going through it. Communication's huge, especially in a relationship. So being able to to communicate it on social media with videos was a good option. I don't know where I'm going with this. Back to the TikTok and Instagram reels.
No, yeah. I'm
a feeler with music. It's before TikTok and reels were a thing, like, I would be at a stoplight and, I don't know, a song would be on the radio and I would somehow in my head frame it to pelvic, relate it to pelvic floor.
Yeah,
and then I would
cool.
put it on our stories. And then, yeah, that's why
that's really
it's
cool.
so fun for us to shoot a reel. It's much easier than doing a picture post and to educate that way because it's just natural.
That's really cool.
Well, to wrap this up, I want to know, what do you have programs people can check out? How can they find you? Any upcoming awesome things that you're working on?
Yeah. So any of our programs are online. They're cheap. I'll be upfront with that. 4-week guides. They're a good price point, I should say. We've got more extensive ones that are our challenges, our 5-day challenges, where we go more in depth with those clients. I want to know what's going on with them. More of like a training style, education style. And then we do our coaching, which I love too. So people will sign up to work with us for 8 weeks. They tell me their goals and then we work them towards that. And then hopefully being able to hand them off to like a postnatal specialist as well, or somebody, a personal trainer certified in the pelvic health region.
Cool. TikTok, Facebook, Instagram, Empower
Your Pelvis. Instagram, empower.your.pelvis.
Okay.
Yep. Cool. EmpowerYourPelvis.com. Instagram, I think it's Empower Your Pelvis. TikTok, I think, is Empower Your Pelvis.
Okay.
Yep.
Most exciting thing you got coming up this year?
Spark It Up in the Bedroom.
Spark
I'm
It
super
Up. Oh, that's not launched yet. That's coming up.
Yeah, next week.
When is that?
Starts
it's
Monday.
Next week.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
That and our C-section challenge is probably.
Is that virtual or is it online or both? Or?
It's all virtual.
Okay.
Yeah. I have a huge heart for C-section moms because I've been one 3 times. So, like, that challenge for me was everything.
I
loved it. Yeah.
Well,
you've done amazing work with my wife, by the way.
Oh, thank you.
I think, because that was her first C-section. It was an emergency C-section at that. And I can just see the difference in what you've done already. So thank you so much for doing that.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
You got any last questions, anything?
No, I think I said what I wanted to say. I think I'm starting to tear up, so I don't want to talk anymore. It's okay. No, because she really has helped her so much.
Oh. Yeah, I know.
Thank you.
Yeah.
It's impactful. Yeah. Well, make sure to follow her on everything. Check out the programs if you're interested. Reach out to her. Obviously, she'll answer any question if she can get back to you. You got a lot of following. but subscribe to the PP Show podcast. I hope to have Amanda on again. Maybe we can film a TikTok for you, leave real quick. And thank you guys for the support. Leave whatever star amount you believe is this show is worth. Okay, so hold on. I need to. No, that's not it. Oh, there we go. Okay. Thank you for coming on the show, Amanda.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you.
Have a good one.